Bienvenue au train des jeux. Nous sommes ici à jouer au basketball. Il va vous conduire à la victoire. Car bonne dans notre grand départ. Et l'esprit du bel an qui vit en tous les mans. Et l'esprit qui ne meurt jamais. Parce que basketball, oui, basketball a arrivé.
Jouer.
Welcome to BizCast Ball, the Basketball BizCast. My name is Corbin Smith. This week, J.R. Smith and Dion Waiters got traded for each other, so I spoke to two people about the different players. Later, Bob Silverman talking about J.R. Smith, but first, a writer for Vice Magazine, or Vice Sports. I don't know if the magazine even exists right now. I think they ceased the print edition, if I remember correctly. The Classical, The Guardian, a Cavs fan, Colin McGowan. He talks about Dion Waiters, a player he is very fond of. All right, I'm here with Colin McGowan. Colin, you're a writer for Vice Sports, The Classical. Where else?
The Guardian. I've got a couple Guardian bylines lately. Yeah.
We're going to talk about Dion Waiters. Dion Waiters just got traded. How are you feeling?
I'm more or less bummed out. I mean, the trade is good, right? Like, the Cavs got back, you know, more talent than they sent out. But, like, Dion Waiters was sort of my little, like, pet project that I really enjoyed watching him over the last, like, 2+ years.
Now, Colin, I have a rationalist streak in me. A vile, disgusting... Oh, man. I have a vile, rationalist streak in me that could never accept Dion Waiters. Can you try to take me into your mental process around this particular player?
Well, he's... So he's a gunner, which is, like, there are other gunners in the league. There's, you know, J.R. Smith, who now is going to become a Cav, and I'll probably enjoy his ridiculousness. You know, Nick Young, and there are other, like, lesser versions of that. Dion Waiters is probably one of the lesser known. I guess he's somewhat infamous because there aren't a lot of gunners left in the league.
No.
Because they're being run out of town constantly. But he's... I don't know that he's, like, more special than, like, a J.R. Smith or a Nick Young, but he has his own sort of idiosyncrasies, and I just always really loved watching him. One thing that I really like about him is that he's one of those gunners that's not – he's not, like – he's brash, but he, like, never seems to be, like, happy. Like, J.R. Smith seems to enjoy being J.R. Smith
a
lot.
Yeah.
And, like, Dion Waiters, I think he – both hates basketball and thinks he's, like, amazing at it. But it's, like, it's this grim, like, burden that he, like, takes on. He's like, okay, I guess I'll be the superstar Dion Waiters that everyone wants me to be. But, it, like, he's like, never happy about it.
And he's also never a superstar.
He's also never a superstar, yeah.
He regards the game as being beneath him.
Yeah, I mean, like, I've made the joke, and this is obviously not true, but it like, speaks to sort of the way that Dion carries himself, that he is the greatest basketball player who has ever lived, and he, like, finds it to be a disdainful task that he has to prove to other people that he is the greatest basketball player that has ever lived. He would rather just be doing something else, and everyone would just accept that as a fact. And he wouldn't have to, like, actually be good.
What was the greatest moment of Dion's career in Cleveland?
Oh. Yeah, you're putting me on the spot. I never remember, like, specific moments.
The biggest thing I could remember is that they were playing the Clippers basically at the beginning of his career.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he caught fire.
Yeah. And he just...
That was his first year, I think.
Yeah. And he just caught... And he just... Yeah. And he just... Lit, it was like in the fifth or sixth
game. He hit like six threes. And they were like contested and from like 24 feet out.
Yeah. And they... Yeah. And they beat the Clippers. And there was like a... I don't know. It was probably the peak of the idea that Dion Waiters was going to be the future. Like, that was...
Well, because also he came into the league and it was one of those picks where everyone was, what? You know, like, really? Deion Waiters fourth?
Yeah, he
like,
came this off guy the bench was picked at Syracuse.
Like 14th a week ago.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, it was that, I think for Cavs fans, we all, there was the what reaction, but the reasoning for the Cavs picking him was that he had like the highest ceiling besides like Andre Drummond, and Andre Drummond scared the crap out of everybody.
Yeah.
And also the Cavs already had Tristan Thompson, who was a big man who couldn't shoot. And so they picked him, and like, you know, that was like, seemed sensible. Everyone wanted, was Brad Beal was in that draft, right?
Yeah.
Brad Beal got picked third.
Yeah.
By the Wizards.
Yes.
We all wanted Brad Beal because Brad Beal can shoot. and he got picked ahead. The Cavs couldn't really do anything about it. So it was like, well, the next best option is Deion Waiters. And in that game, it was like, I remember being in that game and being like, oh, maybe he can shoot. And that's not actually the case. He just had a very hot game.
I remember when he got picked. Like, there was scuttlebutt about how his statistical projection suggested that he was very similar to Dwayne Wade.
Yeah, the stats loved him.
Yeah.
And it, like, there was all that bullshit about how he was a sixth man at Syracuse. Like, that was stupid. Because, like, he came off the bench, but he ended games and he played lots of minutes. Like, he wasn't a bench player at Syracuse. He was, like, the best player on that team.
It's just that, yeah, Jim Boeheim, like, doesn't care about anybody's ability to make, like, money playing basketball.
Like, I grew up in Central New York. I have, like, there is the cult of Jim Boeheim in that region of the country, and I've dealt with, like, Jim Boeheim's crankiness with extremely talented players. Well, you see it now. Like, remember he was sandbagging Tyler Ennis when he declared last year. Like, yeah. Jim Boeheim's just a crank, you know? Like, a good basketball coach, but a cranky old man.
So Deion is gone. A nation mourns. And you mentioned that he's a gunner, and that they are they're sort of the gunner is sort of slowly going extinct, right?
Yeah, like I remember writing something like I don't know, like a year ago, 2 years ago, whenever Brandon Jennings was in free agency, I guess 2 years ago, about like how he thought that he was going to get offers in free agency and he just wasn't getting them. And I was like, that's because he's that type of player is just kind of like being phased out. The volume shooter.
It is like the entire shooting guard position has been like decimated spiritually by the basketball statistical and strategic revolution. Because, like, the idea of a guard who only creates for himself, in the 90s, that makes perfect sense. Like, you need a scorer, you need a guy who can get you a bucket. But, like, post D'Antoni, post just spread, screen, and roll, it's just like, well, I don't, you know, we need ball movement, we need all these things. And so, like, Deion probably would have been a much better player if he had come in another era.
Yeah, in 1995, Deion is probably seen a lot differently.
But now, the NBA is reaching, is leaning towards points of convergence. Is that safe to say?
Yeah, I think that.
Sort of in the same way I think that football probably did a gazillion years ago. I don't know if I personally will mourn Deion as much as you.
I mean, also, he's still going to be around. Yeah, he's going to be like a bench guard for the Thunder, and they'll see how that works.
Yeah, that's weird, right? Why did the Thunder think they need Deion Waiters?
It's weird because, like, isn't, like, Reggie Jackson somewhat similar but probably better?
I don't even know if he's somewhat like he's. I think he's more of a pure pointy kind of player, but
yeah, I.
But it's just like wait, you need a. You need a wing who can make his own shot, on the Thunder.
Well, I mean, I said this. I have an article that's going up at Vice that hasn't been edited yet, but I assume that this will still be in the piece.
I read it, not to brag or anything.
Yeah. I gave Corbin early access. But like, he wanted the offense to run through him in Cleveland. Like, he always thought that the offense should run through him, and as opposed to Kyrie Irving. Like, he thinks he's a better player than Kyrie Irving. And like in two and change seasons, he did not learn that he's not as good. I don't know what the hell he thinks he's gonna do in Oklahoma City.
Right.
He's not gonna get more touches, you know. Like David Blatt was experimenting in Cleveland with like having him lead the second unit for like, you know, 3 or 4 minutes at a time. Like, he was being given opportunities. I assume that they'll try to make him a catch and shoot guy in Oklahoma City, and that was kind of what the Cavs were trying to do, and he didn't want to do it.
Scott Brooks does like an all bench unit because he's a weird, like, because he is the Dion Waiters of coaches in a way.
they're very similar people.
They're extraordinarily similar people. Dion wears big. Does Dion ever wear fake glasses?
I don't think Dion ever did wear fake glasses.
It definitely
seems, which is like weird because like half the NBA has at this point.
One time, Mo Williams was giving an interview in fake glasses while he was playing with the Blazers, and the sticker was still on the
fake glasses are like a quintessential Mo Williams like fashion move.
Yeah,
like as someone who is like I had my Mo Williams years when he was with the Cavs, and like God bless him, but Mo Williams is just a corny dude.
Mo Williams played for the Blazers for a year, and I saw him do a side screen and roll that ended in him taking a long two a million times. He is so frustrated. Anyway, so JR, now are you excited for JR?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like he's maybe a player that like all the like joy has been like wrung out of him by like how many people follow the Knicks. Like, I feel like he's just a walking meme now. And so I feel like it's harder. Like, I'm not going to be able to engage with him on like the human level that I felt like I was able to engage with Dion.
I like
J.R. Smith.
I'm never into Gunners, but I'm kind of into JR for some reason.
Well, we talked about this in our last podcast, and we ended up cutting it, but it's just like you have your like taste in like dickheads, and it's like J.R. Smith is also my kind of dickhead in addition to Dion Waiters, whereas like I don't like Nick Young. Like, I find an assemblage of affectations. There's something very real about both J.R. Smith and Dion Waiters.
I feel like Nick Young like goes home and works on his shtick for some reason, you know, like he's got like catchphrases.
Yeah.
J.R. Smith doesn't say trying to get the pipe all the time. Like, that just happened.
That was amazing. By the way, I think that he went like 2 for 12 in that game, like that night, which is also like a wonderful detail.
I was reading a New York Times interview with JR yesterday because I don't know, he got traded. I figured I was trying to see if I could write something about him. I couldn't.
Well, everyone's writing their J.R. Smith like obits, basically.
Yeah. But he does his Times interview about his tattoos, and he just gives like one sentence answers. There's like 20 questions. He only gives a sentence. Like, if Nick Young was doing the same interview, he would go blah 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 blah. He would make sure that he got as much of the page as he possibly could.
Yeah,
JR's just JR.
By the way, NBA players explaining their tattoos is always seems to be like a window into like who they are as a person. Like, there's I remember reading a wonderful one about Derrick Rose, where he was explaining all of his tattoos, and he, you know, like, this one's for my mom, and this is a thing that I remember from, like, when I did something in high school. And this one is of a wizard playing basketball, and that's the full explanation. Which is just like, you know, like, Derrick Rose just gives the teeth straight. Yeah, no, I just thought that I thought that it would be cool if I got a tattoo of a wizard playing basketball.
Because I am kind of, I'm very good at basketball. Yeah, so I'm much like, that people I'm might like even a wizard say I'm on magic. The basketball. You know, that makes perfect sense. You know, I have a wizard writing a high concept basketball blog on my arm.
And this is because I wrote a high concept basketball blog.
No, I believe that's I write a high concept basketball blog. I won't stop doing that until somebody pays me.
Yeah.
Or until I have children.
Yeah, or until you have someone to look after besides yourself.
Do you have any tattoos, Colin?
No, I'm gonna I was gonna get one, and then the site that I was writing for went under. And I decided it was not a great idea to spend like $200-$300 on a tattoo.
I just can't commit to anything. Like,
I have like a thing, it's just like a part of a like a painting that I really like that I wouldn't mind like putting on my my forearm. But yeah, I'm probably, you know, maybe this summer. Like, I'm fine. The money is finally flowing in. I have a Guardian byline, so I'm basically a rich man.
They pay you in gold over there, right?
Yeah, yeah, just the Queen's gold.
Oh, really?
They ship it over. Actually, it's getting paid by the Guardian is. I wish that they would pay me less often, because there's a $15 wire transfer every single time because they pay out of the UK.
Did you seriously just tell somebody, I wish they would pay me less often?
Oh, no, just less frequently. Like, just wire me money less frequently, because there's a $15 wire fee every time that they pay me.
I just wish I made less money.
No, I wish I made a lot more money.
How much money do you wish you made, Colin?
You know, Corbin. You know, like, it's when you're, you know, under a contract, you get nice pay. And then when you're a freelancer, you just, it's all like piecemeal and you just have to like cobble things together to keep the lights on. It's just the reality of things. It's not really like, I'm not blaming anyone for not paying me enough.
When cobbling, you mean you also have to make shoes, right?
Yeah. I'm also a shoemaker. That's what I was doing for about like 2 months when I was out of work. I was like Daniel Day-Lewis. I sort of like, I went away from my craft. And I decided, like, I'm going to learn this new thing.
Did you teach the guy who taught you how to write about sports?
Yeah. Yeah.
They say that Daniel Day-Lewis gave that guy.
Yeah, his name is Jonathan Abrams. He's doing very well.
Oh, wow. You taught Jonathan Abrams how to write.
Yeah, I was Jonathan Abrams' mentor, despite the fact that I think he's, like, 8 years older than I am.
Oh, wow. That's unbelievable.
But he had never written a thing. And now he's like basically the preeminent, you know, like long form reporter of the NBA.
In fairness, you are the you are a sports writing sensation when you were 14 years old.
Yeah, yeah. I learned from Jonathan Franzen, ironically, which is weird because everything that I've written has been on the internet. So we don't, John and I don't really talk anymore because he's
John,
very mad.
You call him by his.
Yeah, he's furious at me for publishing on the internet. You know, like he only acknowledges texts that are committed to the, you know, the page.
You ever read one of these things, books?
Yeah, I'm.
Not for me, man.
There's that wonderful. Did you see that wonderful Mark Zuckerberg thing where he? I think that like the tweet summed it up perfectly. Was like he's talking about books like they're an app he discovered. Like he's like, I've really found that books are like a way to engage with something in like a long way that isn't, you know, the same as like reading, you know, a tweet. And he's like, I'm thinking of folding in more books into my media diet.
I mean, that's probably going to be how people engage books in the, like, you know, Mark Zuckerberg's a future man.
Yeah, I mean, who am I, you know, well, here's the thing. I don't like deferring to people who are obviously smart, because being, like, really smart and successful is not mutually exclusive with being, like, kind of an idiot in a lot of ways.
Me neither.
Like, Mark Zuckerberg is, like, kind of a dumb douche while also being kind of a genius.
Whoa. It's just that his specific, like, his specific brand of intelligence.
Yeah, it's the lopsidedness thing, right? Where, like, a lot of people that are, like, highly successful at one thing are, like, really incompetent at other things.
For instance, I'm incredible at high-concept basketball blogging and terrible at cleaning myself.
At monetizing it.
Oh, yeah, so bad at monetizing it. So you're a Cavs partisan, and they've kind of sucked, right?
Yeah, they're not very good. I think that people, like, even I guess basketball nerds have been, you know, kind of like interested in the Cavs because they are an interesting team on paper. But I remember people were really lamenting during, like, Christmas Day, because I think, like, everyone was watching the Cavs, and they were just like, they're just, like, kind of shitty. And I was like, yeah, they're not, like, good, and they're not, like, not good in a particularly interesting way. Like, there's kind of dumb palace intrigue about, like, you know, the players not liking David Blatt and
like,
stuff.
Like, that's how boring they are, is that, like, the most interesting thing about them is bullshit.
Yeah, it's just like, you know, like, LeBron seems unhappy. It's like, well, yeah, I mean, like, I'm sure LeBron is, like, mad. Like, why wouldn't he be?
I tune in. I just feel like a sucker every time I watch that team. I'm just like, oh, yeah, they're playing the ding-dongs or whatever. And this one's going to be good. They're gonna cab out. We're gonna see three exciting players doing exciting stuff. And every time, I just get my foot run over by how boring they are.
Yeah, if Kyrie Irving's not, like, Kyrie Irving-ing, then they're not a particularly fun team to watch. And by the way, Kyrie Irving is a joy to watch when he is playing well. He's absolutely one of my favorite players in the league to watch when he's, like, on. Which has been, like, more often than not this year. He's been very good. I think he's actually, like, Kevin Love is the one that is, like, having an existential crisis. Like, Kyrie's kind of playing great, yeah, especially now that he doesn't have to be the playmaker.
Yeah, Love's been kind of odd.
He looks sad.
Yeah.
He's just, like, he's a sad figure. He's just a sad man. He got rid of the beard, which I genuinely think was him, like, trying to, like, snap out of a funk.
One time I had a beard and a girl broke up with me and I was sad and I looked at myself in the mirror and I thought, yeah, that's how I feel. Love has just been, like, he hasn't been good. And I'm pretty sure I enjoyed watching Kevin Love play. Like Kevin Love has been so unenjoyable.
No, remember, maybe 2 years ago, 3 years ago, it was like Ricky Rubio was kind of looking like he was definitely the second best rookie behind Kyrie Irving.
Yes.
And Love was, I want to say he was healthy for a little while. And they kind of looked like, it was like, hey, like Minnesota maybe in like 2 years might be really good. And then Rubio blew out his ACL and that was the end of that.
Yeah. I remember that. I was watching that game. Yeah, that was a bummer.
They weren't good, but they were a lot of fun.
I think maybe they were almost good. Like, I think they were, I think they started out bad and they were starting to crawl towards 500 and then Rubio blew out his knee.
Yeah. They were sad. Cause man, Rubio can really, like, it was Rubio and Love just being like good passers. Like, that was mostly what made them interesting. And then, I mean, the fact that Love can also, you know, drop 32 in a given night.
Yeah. But yeah, he's just been, I mean, bad is, I mean, he hasn't been great, but he's just been depressing.
It's been like overstated that he's been like lousy, which is like not really true.
Yeah, he's been working.
Yeah, it's like, you know, it's a lot of like 16-11 on like not great shooting for a power forward. It's just like, yeah, and he just like doesn't look like he fits. Like, there's these kind of awkward sets where they're just kind of like, well, I guess this is the possession where we throw Kevin the ball. You know, and like, you know, he posts up like sort of sometimes quite ineffectually. Like, he has that like Blake Griffin problem where he goes to post up and he catches the ball 15 feet from the bucket.
Yeah. Yeah. So, such a bummer. Is there, like, so Blatt is, I mean, Blatt is probably getting a short shrift, I think. Is there, like, a sense when you watch the game of what is supposed to be happening that isn't happening? Or is it just, or is there, is it just, like, a stagnance is the idea? Does that make any sense?
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. So that offense that they're running is like, it's supposed to be like that. Like, it's supposed to be that kind of like grinded out, just a lot of pick and rolls. As it has been pointed out by, like, you know, sort of like Zach Lowe types and people that like analyze the game, this is not the offense that Dave Blatt has ever run with any other team. It's just like it's LeBron's offense. It's actually kind of a version of that very unimaginative offense that the Cavs ran the first time that LeBron was in Cleveland with like Mike Brown. It's just that they're like they're better players, so it's a little bit more dynamic. And to be fair, like when all the players are healthy, it's not particularly fun to watch, but it is like pretty good. Like I think that like the numbers with Love, Irving, and LeBron on the floor together, like they're like really, it's one of the best lineups in the league in terms of offense. The problem is on defense, they play this like really intense trapping style where they try to pressure and cause turnovers. And when you have a lot of players who are lousy defenders, you just have games where you just give up 125 points to like teams that aren't particularly good.
That stuff would work on the Heat because everybody was so athletic and so good at defending.
Yeah, the Cavs aren't that athletic, you know. Like, it's LeBron's still a freak, but it seems like he's not what he was 2 years ago. You know, Kevin Love's, you know, an okay athlete. Kyrie Irving's an okay athlete for his position.
Yeah, they're skill players.
Yeah, and like when Dion was on the team, like Dion, he's got like nice quickness on the offensive end, but he has like I think he moves really badly laterally or something because like guys just blow by him. And guys will blow by J.R. Smith because J.R. Smith is J.R. Smith.
Yeah, yeah. Come on, wait. Shumpert's all right though.
No, that at was least by well, reputation. That's the trade. It's like they got Shump, who's like a good defender, you know. Yeah. And by the way, Kyrie Irving catches a lot of shit. Kyrie Irving's been fine this year as a defender. He's trying. I mean, he's said that in the media. He's like, yeah, you know, like I was making like a lot of excuses my first 3 years in Cleveland, but like I am really, you know, going to try this year. And he has tried, and he's a pretty good athlete. So he's, you know, an average defender.
But God damn, there is no rim protection at all.
Yeah, no, it's really bad. I mean, Tristan Thompson is like trying to be the shot blocker, and Tristan Thompson, like when he came into the league, that's kind of what like we thought he would be because he can jump really high, but he is like he's one of the most like unathletic athletic players in the league. Like he has like tremendous athleticism, but it's like how he applies it is just strange. And so like he's not really a shot blocker. He's trying to be because he's just like doing his best, but yeah, the best rim protector on the team is Tristan Thompson, which is not good.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Brendan Haywood.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, Brendan Haywood. He's still around. He's wearing headbands and waving towels. You know, Brendan Haywood's a fine like presence on the bench. I mean, like I don't expect him to bring anything to the basketball team. I evaluate him on like, you know, like the sorts of looks he gives when like other players hit threes and stuff.
One of those sort of bullcrappy analytics things was that like Steve Nash touched a lot of people and that promoted teamwork and togetherness. Does Brendan Haywood touch a lot of people?
Well, that, I guess that guy is Mike Miller, because Mike Miller is supposedly like the best guy ever.
Yeah.
Like there was a long my mentee Jonathan Abrams wrote a very long piece about why Mike Miller is like everyone's best friend in the NBA. And I like that he tried to drill. It's funny because like there's some good stuff in that article, but he like tried to drill down into like why people like Mike Miller. And basically like the very unromantic answer is just like, he's just a great guy.
he's a nice man,
you know, and like he's got like a good sense of humor and stuff. Like there's a quote in there where like Mike Miller says, like, I don't know, man, like, you know, I'm just like a happy person. Like, I'm just kind of blessed like that.
Why does everybody like you? Well, I have a sunny disposition. Oh, no, no, no. What's the secret?
Yeah, the explanation was just like, I'm a happy person. And like everyone said that he's like a model professional, like, you know, just like always on time for stuff, like a good listener and stuff, like coachable, you know. Sometimes it's not that complicated.
Do you have hope that this is going to, I mean, not even be like a great team, but become like an engaging thing?
Oof. I don't know. It's hard. Like, you're asking me this as like someone who's just like been through the Cavs. And it's like, I don't know. It doesn't feel good. I don't, you know, I wrote an article about Kevin Love and like, you know, him being like 10 games into the season and just being like writing like the calm down article, like, you know, like he'll work his way in and I'm sure like it'll get better, but I don't, like, maybe Kevin Love is just not the third player on this team. And like, I don't think that they'll go out and get anybody else. Like, I don't think they can do better than him, but I don't know. I don't think this works. Like, I'm genuinely worried about it.
I don't think this would happen, but I think they would be a lot better if they swapped out Love for Gasol.
Mark?
Yeah, yeah.
You mean?
Yeah, yeah, not Pat.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, because he's, like, a complete player, and, you know, he can really defend, and he's a good passer and stuff. But the thing is, like, Marc Gasol, well, it speaks to, like, this is what everyone did with Chris Bosh, is right when he was in Miami. It's like everyone kind of like shit on him, and then what happened was like in the later years of the Miami era, everyone praised Chris Bosh for like finding his role and like, you know, kind of filling in the spaces that like Wade and LeBron couldn't. And I don't, like, Marc Gasol is that kind of player where he like fits in with, like, he'll fit in on any team.
Yeah.
I don't know if Kevin, like, maybe Kevin Love is not as malleable a talent as Chris Bosh, or, you know, for that matter, Marc Gasol.
Anyway, pleasure to speak to you today, Colin. Is there anything else you feel like you need to address on the airwaves?
No, I think we're good.
You finally spilled the beans about your tutelage of Jonathan Abrams.
Yeah, I'm glad that's finally out there.
Yeah.
I hope that's something that stays in the water for a long time and confuses a lot of people.
Yeah. Good to talk to you, Colin.
Yeah. Take care, Corbin.
You too. Thanks to Colin. Read his new column advice. And follow him on Twitter at @CS_McGowan. Up next, we have Bob Silverman. Bob is a writer for Knickerblogger, the About.com Knicks Vertical, Vice, The Classical, and The Guardian. I'm actually sensing an odd pattern in this episode. We talk about J.R. Smith. Enjoy. All right, I'm here with Bob Silverman. Robert Silverman, what do you prefer to be called?
You know, it's weird. Here's an interesting thing. I was pretty much Bob up until I went to go to the clown school. And we've talked about this before.
Yeah, we've talked about the clown school.
We've talked about this extensively, and there's a reason why I mention this, because I'm going to be bringing up the clown school again in a little bit. But anyway, I was Bob, and I was always Bob, or Bobby, you know, it's a sort of term of endearment.
That's a New York name.
Yeah. Hey, Bobby.
Hey, Bobby. Hey, Bobby. You're very New York, Bob.
Yes, exactly. So, but anyway, I once I'm in France, I like give them my name and I say, Bob Silverman. And they're like, Bob? Bob? C'est quoi ça, Bob? Je ne comprends pas le Bob. Bob? It's like split pea soup boiling over. And I was like, fine. Robert. And they're like, Robert. You know, like that. And so I was Robert the entire time I was there. And then I kind of sort of held on to it because it makes me seem all grotted up and stuff.
So, Bob.
Yeah.
Knicks fan.
Yes.
Knicker blogger.
Yes.
The Guardian.
Yes.
Clowning.
Yes.
You've dominated every field you've touched.
Yes.
And there's some Knicks. There's always Knicks news,
mm-hmm.
in a way.
Yes. There's always Knicks news because it just because fair or otherwise, things that happen in New York are more important than things that happen in other places. That's not fair and that's not right, but this is the way the world is.
So my family, whom I love, they don't mean shit in New York. Right?
Yeah.
Okay. There's a particular bit of Knicks news, though. J.R. Smith?
Yes, he's gone now. Bye, Earl. Bye, Earl.
I think it's safe to say that the last 2.5 years, 3 years, 3.5 years, how long has J.R. been on the Knicks?
Ends up being like a total of 3 years. It was half a season in 2011-12.
Because he had to finish.
Half of this season.
That was a lockout season.
He had to finish running up a $3,000 room service tab in China and faking an injury in order to be released and having his sister and girlfriend start fights in the stands. So he had to get that out of the way.
In fairness, although I won't defend the fights, but
you will like die on the hill of a $3,000 room service tab.
Yeah, I will, you know, what's so wrong with that?
I will too. He just did it. The best part is the reason he gave, which is he just wanted to see how long they would keep bringing him food for.
I feel like any athlete who does something to drain money out of the coffers of franchise she-ship.
Yeah.
I'm pro that. Whatever,
oh, yeah.
Go ahead.
And I think he might still not have gotten paid by his Chinese club. I know he had to like threaten to drag them into court at one point. He might never have gotten paid.
He probably would have had to take him to international court, to the UN. Yeah.
To The Hague, I think, is where this would be properly adjudicated. But if you're asking me, it's been 3 years, and he's the most Nick of all time, really. He's the most Nick-like Nick since Clyde Frazier, is my opinion. Forget your Patrick Ewing and your hard scrabble John Starks and your workman-like Charles Oakley. Yes, these are all very nice, fun players. But no one is more Nick's than J.R. Smith, not since Clyde.
J.R. grew up in New Jersey.
Yes.
Has ties to the area.
Mm-hmm.
Likes to socialize.
Yes, that's what I mean.
He guns a little bit. It's strange that he's gone. Because really, in the season where they were really great, and JR was really great that season, right?
He was weird. You know, he shot like pretty much his numbers from that year and this year, aside from the amount of minutes he was playing and the amount of shots he was actually getting, they're more or less the same. He had a stretch towards the end where he was really dominant, where like for the first time he was really getting to the rim a lot and using that dribble penetration to both get to the foul line and do these nice little dump off passes. He was really becoming a second complimentary scorer. But that was like a 20 games, and that's it. The rest of the year he was very up and down.
I was talking.
JR is surprisingly consistent in his JR-ness.
I was talking to Colin.
Colin McGowan. Professional dominatrix.
Yes, he is a professional dominatrix.
What's the male-gendered version of dominatrix, or is it just non-gender specific?
Dominator. Wait, that's probably true.
Yeah, I know. You just like swung for the fences there and nailed it, didn't you?
Wow, good job.
Yeah. Anyway, yes, talking with Colin.
I was talking with Colin about Dion Waiters earlier.
Uh-huh.
To whom he's been
compared to JR. I think someone tweeted this. I forget who did, and I think they said, which was great. And they said that wow, Dion just got traded for his own looper.
Yeah.
That was the money way to describe it. I think.
I think it was Andrew Sharp. Maybe. Yeah. I can't remember. But but in a way, Dion is nothing like JR because Dion. Is not efficient. Like even the ideal Dion, it still takes a lot of long twos. He's not modern.
No.
JR is.
The thing that drives everyone so absolutely crazy about J.R. Smith is that they know that there's a really good two guard trapped in J.R.'s body there somewhere, under the tattoos maybe, perhaps, or beneath the pipe. When J.R. is on, he can be really, really good. He's a great catch and shoot shooter. He can beat people off the dribble. He can be a very good passer, and he can even play halfway decent defense. He's a really good rebounder too when he puts his mind to it. It's the stars in the universe have to combine with the right mix of post partying alcohol buzz to make that happen on a consistent basis. You just don't know when it is.
And it's not just that he's good; it's that he's useful. Like, there are plenty of two. Like, I think the two guard is the worst position in the NBA right now, because the traditional definition of what a two guard is doesn't make sense in a modern context.
Right. Right. I mean, look at the great two guards of the past. A lot of them, you'd be like, all the advanced statistics are kind of giving a little stink eye to all the guys who were like, oh, that was an all-star two guard. Like, I can't imagine what they would think of even like Clyde Drexler in this game. Just because he shot around 25% from three and put up some serious numbers, but was a volume shooting long two gunning kind of guard and not great defensively.
And look, and I'll put this out here. If you look at one of Jordan's shot charts, it doesn't look optimized at all. He shoots incredible. He shot incredible percentages from middle range, but if you took Jordan and you just transported him into today, he would not fit necessarily.
He wouldn't fit necessarily, but I think Jordan, of course, would be the first to be like adapt his game and pick up a consistent 3-point jumper. I think that would take. But I think you have to look down on the lower rungs at like guys who wouldn't necessarily be as adaptable. But I totally hear what you're saying.
So JR is. Is that his best? He's a rim and a three player. Like, that's what you want. Yeah. But he's just so inconsistent.
He's maddeningly inconsistent. I mean, he's very consistent in his inconsistency-ness. Can I roll with that? He's consistently inconsistent or inconsistently consistent consistently.
Consistentless, contextless. He's contextless, certainly. So you posit that JR is the Knicksiest Nick in the Nick of Knicks.
He is, because these are the qualities that he has. One, knows how to party. A real Nick like Clyde knows how to have a good time. Is loved by the ladies. These are facts. And also there's an actual like one, he's a colossal fuck up. But there's like JR is having fun. JR's having fun playing basketball, and while that may not make him Tim Duncan, the NBA is better than if there were more JRs than if there were more Tim Duncans.
I think Tim Duncan has fun.
I think buying a really, really nice fitting pair of slacks is not the definition of fun.
All right. Well, yeah, but all right, maybe Tim doesn't have fun. I don't know. I think Tim Duncan has fun. I think Kobe doesn't have fun. I find Kobe joyless.
There is a joyless, grim quality to Kobe Bryant, which, yes. Okay, that's a better comparison. JR is definitely having more fun than Kobe Bryant is. Kobe Bryant has a will to be great that is maniacal and makes him into kind of a dick a lot of the time. And he's not having a lot of fun doing it. For fun, Kobe's fun is hanging out with Arianna Huffington. And that's just weird. That's just some weird, wild, wacky stuff. Even for Melo. Melo doesn't have fun. Melo doesn't have fun playing basketball.
Melo's
you can
conscious.
Tell.
Melo's too conscious.
Melo is so aware of what he's doing. I think you're right. Like, Melo is absolutely one of those people who's caught in the throes of his own burdens of self and being aware of what he looks like and aware of what people think of him and aware of whether the calls are going the right way and how he's being perceived. He needs to like really pull a Frozen and just let it go and try to have fun. because his game is fun, but you could tell that he's not having fun. The only time he smiles is actually when he's pissed off. Like when he's like, oh, I'm not getting the calls when I drive to the rim again. What is life? I will laugh at the fervent stupidity of it all. And that's not fun.
But JR.
But JR is having fun. JR plays with kids in halftime games and won't pass the ball. JR plays air guitar. JR sends, like, JR had a scavenger hunt in December, where he left clues on his Instagram, and you could wander around New York City if you got the answer right, and you got a free toy surprise.
What was the toy?
I have no idea what it was. I didn't participate in the scavenger hunt.
Oh, you didn't?
Well, people got the answer really quickly, and then they were tweeting it, and so I assume there were always people closer to where the gift was to me, so I didn't actually go looking for it. I did try to join him on his midnight bike ride.
Oh, what went wrong?
I was too late. I was all the way out in Brooklyn, and he was doing it in Manhattan, and it was like, it's going to be at 2:30, and by the time I heard about it, it was close to then already, and so I tried to book into Manhattan, and I was just like way behind the line, and I couldn't figure out from social media how to catch up with any of them, so I was just sort of like wandering around the streets of Manhattan at 3 in the morning being like, JR, it's kind of sad. It's a sad story, really.
Wow, that was hard to hear.
Yeah. Well, it was a wistful, like, lonesome cry.
Did you just collapse somewhere and I don't know what's a part of New York?
I fell apart in the gutter in a pile of my own tears and regrets. It was really a tough night.
Was it the nixest moment of your life?
No, I've had many more.
Oh wow.
Yeah. That's a whole other conversation. I don't even want to touch like what's the most Knicks moment. But the Knicks as an avatar can't have someone who succeeds all the time. The Knicks need to have someone who's just basically flawed. And that's what makes him the most Knicksiest Nick of all Nick time. And again, like, there's something joyous about him that I think you can't help but respond to, or at least I can't, that I find so, like, appealing, and it makes you want to root for the guy. Like, you know, I don't know if he does have a substance abuse problem. He might. Or he might just be one of those people who's like, fuck it, I'm going to go party. But if you're getting popped for marijuana four times, it might be a sign you have a problem in the NBA, which doesn't really want to catch you.
Oh, I'm not. I refuse to categorize anybody's marijuana use as a problem.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean,
it can be, though.
Okay.
Yeah, but you're wrong there. You don't have to, but you're wrong there. It's okay, though.
I have really aggressive opinions about marijuana should be legal. Should be allowed in the NBA. I don't know. What do I care?
I think so too. I think so. Of course, I think so. I believe that 110%. But yeah, don't do that. It's costing him millions of dollars. You have to smoke a lot and have very little impulse control to not realize the amount that he has smoked in his life has cost him a huge amount of money. Or maybe it's just that. Maybe he just doesn't care about the money. And really would rather, like, get high when he wants to get high. And says, if it costs me a few million, okay.
I have friends who smoke marijuana. And I bet you it's like...
What?
Yeah, look.
I am hanging up this phone right now.
Sorry, West Coast.
Are the feds listening in? Crank call! Crank call! Crank call! There, now we're safe. Yes, you were saying?
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Oh, yeah, we're getting tapped. I mean, yeah. I live in Washington, so...
Right.
I don't even think about it. And I'll bet you that the equivalent amount of money that they spend on marijuana is the same amount that JR has spent on fines.
Do you know how much he's been fined?
How much?
Well, bring up the answer right now. I have it.
Okay.
I have it in fact.
You just pull it out of your pocket.
It's on a folder somewhere. Yeah. It's on the back of one of my AA chips. Let me see. $900,000, dude.
$900,000. So that is...
$900,000.
Over his entire career?
Yeah.
So he is on a $12 million contract right now. He's probably made $12 million before that. That's...
I'm going to book up his basketball reference plate to see how much he's paid, how much he's made.
That would be...
This is... You'll edit out these, like, horrible sort of crippling pauses from this, right?
Nope.
You can do that. You can do that in post, right?
Oh, no, I could, for sure. I definitely could.
Okay, good. That's all I care about. But you won't do it, is what you're saying.
Well, nah, you know.
According to the interwebs, he's made $34 million in his career.
So that's a 34th of his total income that he's made.
Yes.
He's also made money off of other things.
Oh, so you're talking percentages.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm talking percentages. Not
okay.
My friends. No. My friends don't spend $900.
Oh, okay. All right. I was confused by the question.
Yeah. So, like, percentage-wise, 136, that's still pretty high.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so JR's gone.
JR's gone. And here's a fun thing. JR already said to the writers in Cleveland, my motto is, when in doubt, shoot the ball.
That's a good – you know what? That's not the worst motto.
Mine is, when riding – sit in the back, people will think you're cool.
Is it working?
I have no evidence to the contrary.
Mine is eat more quesadillas.
That's a good one. I like it.
Yeah.
I'm gluten intolerant. I'd have to get like those like corn tortillas, and I hate the corn tortillas.
Oh my god, you hate corn tortillas?
I prefer wheat.
You prefer wheat tortillas to corn tortillas?
Yes.
Even when they're fried.
Yes.
New York. This is New York City.
Right
here. Out here on the West Coast.
I'm sorry. I've tried the ones at Chipotle, so I know. In any case, we're getting off track. Like the thing about JR is, there's this weird perception that he was traded because he was a locker room cancer. I haven't spent nearly enough time, or really barely any at all, in the Knicks locker room to be able to say for sure. But, like, my favorite story from the Knicks locker room is I was doing an article 2 years ago, let's say, and when the Knicks were having their good season. And afterwards, everyone was having fun, and I got to see Rasheed in his underwear, like, in tidy whiteys, by the way, for a good long stretch there. And Rasheed really was as Rasheed as you think he would be. He was, like, you know, sort of, like, tired and loafing around and doing this sort of, like, kind of angry but not really uncle thing. And, you know, Tyson Chandler was being very serious and holding court while putting on a cape and a Zorro hat.
That was a fun time.
Oh god. TysonChandler'sCapes.com. Really? I really gotta register that.
The best thing about Tyson's capes is that they interviewed about him and he just said, yeah, I'm into eccentric things like capes.
And artwork. He is into some eccentric things.
Oh no, yeah.
He's a very well-rounded individual.
But Tyson seems great.
Yeah. Tyson is great. Tyson is really cool, and it seems like a really cool. But in any case, JR was like not in the locker room for the entire time that I was there, and I was like, "Where's JR? Where's JR? Where's JR?" And at one point, he like jumps in, screams Poindexter right into Kurt Thomas's ear, and then runs away. And that was the only time I saw him in the locker room.
Why did he call Kurt Thomas Poindexter?
The world will never know.
Famous nerd.
Kurt Thomas. Kurt Crazy Eyes Thomas calls him Poindexter.
You know, America's geek. The NBA's Urkel. Kurt Thomas.
I don't know, but it was, and I'm sitting there trying to think, like, was that funny? I thought that was funny. Or was he just being a dick? Or what? And Kurt Thomas was like, you know, smiling and being like, and like, sort of fake, like, I'm going to beat you, J.R. Smith. But it was like, you know, funny locker room hijinks. And I was like, why did he call him Poindexter? I really wanted to know. I wanted him to come back so I could ask him. But he never
gone.
Did.
He's into the night. He dissolved into the air.
Or, you know, the stats about him playing, like, shooting, like, not just small sample size, but, like, considerably worse on Saturday and Sunday, and even worse than that on Saturday and Sunday day games.
Does everybody perform worse in those games? We've talked about these games before. I love these games. They're incredible. These early morning Knicks games, I think they're the greatest. Everybody is, like, little hungover. Everybody in the there's like kids in the crowd. There's clearly like people ambling around.
Mm-hmm.
There, it's not. It's so like not like what the audience of sports expects a sports crowd to be, like your moralistic ideas about people like cheering and getting behind the team. It's just like, nah, there's an event going on today. And so people are like ambling around it. I also like that people bring their families. I think that's nice.
Uh-huh.
Anyway. So JR is gone.
Uh-huh.
Do you feel like this is a transition out of something that makes the Knicks special?
They're not as much fun already. Like, Shumpert was fun. I mean, Shumpert was tragic and kind of sad because you knew he was never going to make it in New York. It just wasn't meant to be. There were too many stops and starts and too many times where he felt like, you know, like the pissed off or put in the quote-unquote doghouse or that he didn't understand what his role was or that his role kept shifting and they kept asking him to do different things. He got kind of janked around. And at a certain point, there was no going back with him. But I loved me some Iman Shumpert. Iman Shumpert is a really, really nice guy. And I liked him watching him play. And even, you know, it's if he's going to succeed, and I want him to succeed, it's going to have to be somewhere else. So,
yeah,
you know, I'm like, okay, you know, it's like, yeah, I can be big enough to like, you know, pull a full sting and saying, if I love someone, I'm going to set him free. But JR was fun. JR made the Knicks more fun. He didn't always make them better as a basketball team, and he often frequently made them worse. But, you know, the Knicks have been bad for so long. It's they're so boring right now.
Yeah.
There's nothing fun about this team. You know, the Sixers are bad, but they're kind of fun. Like, you got Tony Roten doing Tony Roten things, and you know, the, like, and you can watch Michael Carter Williams or them bring like janky D League 3-and-D guys off the bench to like just gun wildly.
McDaniels.
Right. They've got some fun guys. And Nerlens Noel is like, you know, like a little hatchling, and let's see if he can walk. But or a very tall hatchling, and let's see if he can walk.
A dinosaur hatchling.
Yes. And, you know, so there's fun. There's like fun stuff there, even though they're awful and awful on purpose. But there's nothing like when I watch the Knicks, and I'm still watching them because I don't know, dumb habit.
You write about them too.
I write about them too, so I kind of have to. Like, I root for Cole Aldrich to play well. I root for Shane Larkin's like little engine that could 3-pointers to go in. I root for like Travis Ware to do something, and aside from looking like what's his name, Sam Waterston's kid in Dead Poets Society, and like that's it for the fun things of the Knicks. There's nothing else fun about that team. Even Prigioni's like Pablo Sneaks and like weird, I'm trying to throw a rabid lemur away from my face 3-pointers aren't fun anymore. I've turned on Priggs. That's how bad it's got.
This is hard to hear.
Yeah. I'm like, you know what? Trade him to San Antonio. It's his fucking manifest destiny. Just do it and get it over with. Give him a good team to play for. He deserves it.
Because last year it was a disaster, but it was an incredible disaster.
Oh, yeah. Last year was like fascinating, and like you had no idea what kind of weirdness. I mean, I even want Bargnani to come back because at least Bargnani is going to do something awesome at some point. I would rather have Bargnani getting consistent minutes than Jason Smith, whom you know my feelings about already.
Oh, yeah, they're not nice feelings.
No, I want to shoot him into the sun.
All right, Bob, let's calm down.
I want to go full like Dick Cheney on his ass and have him like taken to a black site somewhere in Thailand.
Oh my god,
that's how I feel about Jason. I'm sure he's a lovely person,
but you want him to get thrown into a black site.
I want him to do some rectal feet, get some rectal rehydration. Is what I'm saying.
Oh my god, that's Pop. That's disgusting.
Uh huh. What's your point? I stand by my statement.
Okay. All right. Just making sure you knew it was disgusting. I don't. You know.
Yeah. But, you know, It's just so sad. It's then, and none of them are having fun either. Like, I have a feeling they might have won one or two more of these games if, like, this bleak sense of, like, dread didn't come over all of them once they fell behind by 10 points. You could, it's like an emo kid, like, writing, like, a girl he likes, or, like, a note on Facebook and having her not like it, and so he's going to sit in his room and be depressed for, like, 5 days afterwards watching this team.
Is the girl winning?
Hashtag winning. Yes, she is. Because you don't want to date that emo kid. For one, his hair is very greasy, and his skin is awful.
What if, skateboard good?
Skateboard emo is different. I'm talking, like,
oh, you're hard.
I'm talking, like Elliot Smith emo.
Elliot's... Bob, there are some musical distinctions here that you're really violating. I'm not going to get angry about it.
I don't know nearly enough about music to make that statement. Okay. Like, how about this? Listens to the Walkman a lot music.
Oh. Oh, that's me. What the hell?
Ah, deep burn.
They're really good. You know, they're a tight guitar combo. Some of their songs are a little sad.
Look, kids love Paul Maroon. I'm more of a hardcore Jonathan Fire Eater fan, because, you know, I keep it real that way. But we're really digressing, because I don't know anything about music, so I shouldn't be saying any of this. Right. Forget the whole thing.
Just everybody out there, I want you to know that Bob has embarrassed himself on the topic of Elliot Smith today.
I don't know things about music. I just know what I like. Right?
Crumb believable.
Can we move on? I want to move.
Yeah. How do you feel about this new cap space on your team? Do you think it's going to play good, or?
Let's just say this, it can't play worse. I mean, I have no idea what this team is doing. I mean, I do have an idea what they're doing. They're putting every single egg that they have into the, like, getting Jahlil Okafor, and then maybe one of the restricted free agents of Jimmy Butler or Kawhi Leonard or Draymond Green agree to take all their sweet creamery cap space. And if that doesn't happen, if, like, they pick a guy who's a bust, because that never happens in the draft, and you know, all those restricted free agents re-sign and they have to throw a great deal of money at, like, Greg Monroe, they could suck for another 5 years, too.
Oh, man, Greg Monroe on the Knicks would be a bummer.
Uh-huh.
I do not want to see that.
What? You don't think that there's, like, a serious chance that that's happening?
Yeah. Oh, man, he's kind of like a triangle-y player, too.
Yeah, someone's going to be like, oh, look, we'll play him at power forward, and then we'll put Melo at small forward, and we'll throw, like, a shit ton of money at Robin Lopez, and then we'll be big.
You know, Robin's good.
Robin's good. Robin would be a fine signing.
I watch Robin. Robin's great. If Robin signed with the Knicks, I'd be kind of bummed out.
But what if they offered him, like, I don't know, 3 years and, like, $36 million? Is he still great?
I don't know, man.
Because I don't know why Robin Lopez would leave Portland unless he's getting paid all the monies.
Well, if he's as good at protecting the rim as things out there suggest that he is, that's not totally unreasonable. Statistics, I'll say it.
Or how about overpaying Omer Asik, you know, instead of Robin Lopez?
Yo,
Robin
man, Lopez... Omer in New York is... Like, if JR is the most Nick... Like,
he's the least Nick.
Yeah. Omer is the height of least Nick.
No. This team is... It's just like... There's like a 10% window where this works and the Knicks are good. Aside from that, I can't see how it can work.
You might have undershot that a little bit. What if the draft pick's good? There's no reason
to
believe...
There's an Elliot Smith chance that the Knicks are good, is what I'm saying.
I don't, I'm trying to convert that into math.
I don't know either. I'm saying I don't know anything about music, is my point.
All right, but, that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, look, what I mean, I'm sure there's like a fine statistician out there somewhere who could say of the top three picks taken in the last 10 years, what percentage have turned out to be an actual you can build your team around this guy star?
Probably not that many.
Not that many. That's why I went for 10%. Because if that part doesn't hold true, if they don't get like, because Melo, as he goes at like from ages 30 to say 34, is not that, you can debate whether he was that guy from ages 25 to 30, but he's not going to be that guy from 30 to 35. He needs to be second fiddle to someone, is the only way the Knicks are going to be really good. So that's what you're banking on. Because in 2017, when everybody has cap space, I don't think anyone's fighting to go play with like 32-year-old Melo and a not superstar draft pick.
What is up with Carmelo and the injury thing?
The Knicks have always said to Carmelo, the fact that you don't really believe in modern science is not really a problem to us. He doesn't like needles, so he often avoids getting like injections because he doesn't like the needles. He's also scared of cats.
Well, in fairness.
They're scary. And he, it's just like, if Carmelo decides he wants to play, he plays. If he decides he doesn't want to play, he doesn't play. The fact that the doctors might say you probably shouldn't play really doesn't matter. That's not true for the rest of the team. Melo has his own set of rules. The Knicks doctors are also historically have been very, very, very bad at their jobs, especially in terms of like keeping people from getting injured. Like prophylactic and preventative medicine is not really their forte. And then there's the fact that the Knicks are very...
Did you say prophylactic?
Yeah. Like preventative.
Oh, okay. I thought you meant like sex prophylactics. Continue.
No. And then there's the fact that the Knicks always lie about their injuries. Like for years, the running joke was that if like a Knick was decapitated, like they would say he's day to day with a slightly injured Knick.
And so it's just maybe eventually he'll decide it's time to stop playing, and so he'll stop.
Yeah, he's going to shut it down at some point. I really think he will. I think now it went from like the Knicks doctors saying it to the Knicks doctors and the Knicks coaches, and like the Knicks coaches and other people and like his agents and everyone around him being like, dude, get the surgery you need to have, rest up. The Knicks can suck with you or without you, and it doesn't really make a difference.
What if, and hear me out on this, Bob.
Sure.
All-Star break.
Yeah.
He plays in the All-Star game.
Which I kind of think he wants to do because it's in New York, or I'm sure the Knicks would like him to as well.
And then he's out.
Yeah.
That sounds like something that could happen, right?
No, yeah. I mean, I can see a scenario where he doesn't play for the next month, plays like a game or two before the All-Star game, plays the All-Star game, and then suffers an aggravation of the injury and has it, and he's gone.
Would you mind? Like, is this annoying to you?
That he keeps playing?
Yeah.
I think Melo has only so many miles on his odometer left, so I'm not sure why continuing to ring them up with this team makes any sense at all. Yeah, I've been saying for a good month that he should shut it down.
Okay.
A month and a half, even, maybe. Once he started, the knee problems started cropping up. I was like, yeah, shut it down.
Who cares?
Because it's a weird thing. It's like, you know, we keep hearing, and I'm not a doctor, to be clear, nor am I a someone who knows anything about music.
You're a clown.
But, yes, I am.
Yeah.
It seems to me that, you know, this injury that he has, which the doctors have said you can't make it any worse, but it's just how much pain and discomfort you can deal with. That doesn't really make sense to me, because it seems to me if you're playing with discomfort in one body part, that you will in fact like move and shift weight to other body parts to compensate for this one part that isn't working, thereby potentially injuring a different body part. This happens in sports ball a lot, that a player has an injury on one part of his body and then in trying to compensate it for it, screws up a different part. So it seems to me like that's not really true what they're saying, the doctor men. Or women.
Or demons.
for Dr. Demons, yes. For the demons.
Yeah. Knicks hire demons to do their medicine. That, you know what? That's what makes Melo so nervous.
Yeah.
So he walks there. There's a guy with a big demon face. Fire coming off of him. Because,
God.
I'd rather that... Yeah.
The Knicks medicine practice is just feeding their players huge amounts of hallucinogens and then bringing in all kinds of people to do whatever.
You know who recommended that doctor, right?
J.R. Smith.
Oh, I was going to say Billy Joel, but...
Oh.
But I guess you don't get music jokes.
So. No, I don't. How is that Billy Joel?
Yeah. Billy Joel is friends with demons. Right? We all think that?
No. I like Billy Joel.
I like Billy Joel.
I do.
Every time I talk to you, you get less punk, Bob.
There is nothing more punk rock than unironically liking Billy Joel. Oh, you kids, you think you're so cool because everybody hates Billy Joel.
Well, yeah,
no,
he's terrible.
He writes a good song. And he is a captivating live performer.
Have you been?
I to his have monthly no engagement? Comment at this time.
Oh my God, have you been to Billy Joel's monthly Madison Square Garden show?
No, I have not. Not Madison Square. No comment. No. Crank call. I did not go to Madison Square Garden. It's possible that I may have gone to a Billy Joel concert. And it's possible that it was in Long Island, where he really is from, his native breeding ground, so to speak.
You went to Long Island to see Billy Joel?
Nassau Coliseum. I saw Billy Joel at the Nassau Coliseum. He was wonderful. It was a captivating performance. Yes?
Oh, my God. You've left me with some hard information.
I've also seen Gigi Allen, okay? I've done both.
Yeah. All right. Gigi cancels it out. You're neutral
I've
now.
I've seen a Guar concert.
Well, we've all seen Guar.
We've all seen a Guar concert.
Yeah, we've all seen Guar in the streets. Guar in our hearts.
Yes. I'm telling you, I like some of the songs that Billy Joel sings. It was 20 years ago. And someone gave me a ticket, so I went to see Billy Joel. And I enjoyed it. He played Captain Jack. That was enough for me.
A pleasure speaking to you today, Bob.
Are we good here? Do you think we've covered the essential JR-ness, or is it really just about my complete and total lack of musical taste that we've learned?
I think that we've learned a lot of things.
Good. All right, thanks for having me, Corbin.
No problem. Thank you to Bob. You can read him all over the internet. He also writes for the Daily Beast. I totally forgot about that. Follow him on Twitter at Bob Saieta. That's BobSaietta. Thank you for listening this week. I hope you enjoyed yourself. Have a good week. Please have a tremendous week, even. I hope all of your dreams come true this week. Thank you.
Thank you.